And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I am Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to, hey, the guys are actually going to be positive today as Minnesota rose through the state of Illinois once again in a 41-14 victory, of which I think the final score was representative of what the game kind of felt like in terms of the vibes. So before we get into that and introduce the third member of our podcast today, Luke, do you want to give the folks a fine word from our sponsor?
Yeah, the Goal Line Club is sponsoring Gopher Gridiron Radio once again this year. They've been a long-term sponsor of ours, and we appreciate their support. But more importantly, make sure that you support them. Why do that? Well, this is a pandemic shortened season, and you know nobody's able to attend games. Well, that's not entirely true. Most people aren't able to attend games, so there's significant revenue lost, whether it's number of games or people at the gate. So if you are interested in supporting Gopher football in any way monetarily to this year, most importantly, is a year to support the Goal Line Club. You can join them at goalineclub.org. All right.
So joining us is the third member of the podcast, as always, is my second cousin and former Golden Gopher offensive lineman, Derek Burns. Derek, how are things for you today? And how much fun was it watching this Gopher offensive line push piles all game long?
I'm doing very well, and there's a lot to cover today. It was fun to see some changes from week to week, that particularly on the defensive side of the ball. But then, as you said, Ryan, definitely one of the better games in the PJ Fleck era on the offensive side, particularly the offensive line. So a lot to get into and looking forward to it.
All right, let's maybe start there with the positivity. I think the things to note yesterday, the Gophers had 325 yards rushing. That's 6.9 yards per carry. Mo Ibrahim on his own had 30 carries for 224 yards, 7.5 yard average, with four touchdowns and a long of 53. Cam Wiley, Trayson Potts also got into the mix, both of which averaged over 6 yards a carry. Potts actually averaged 16.3 before going down with an injury. But all in all, just a superb effort. And finally, a little bit more balance, still a ton of rushing. But they started out throwing the ball to kind of set up the pass. Rashad Bateman with 10 receptions, 139 yards and a touchdown on the day. So Derek, maybe to start, just talk about that offensive line, because they did pave the way for these running backs to have so much success.
Yeah, it was interesting to see Illinois' defensive approach to the game, which was different than what Maryland did. Illinois chose to start the game with plus one in the box and try and I think get some pressure on Tanner Morgan in RPO situation. So as you said, Luke, they opened up throwing quite a bit because they had the numbers on the outside and had some success. And we can talk about that a little bit later and maybe what Tanner has to do to really take advantage of that. But the run game, of course, emerged as the game went on. And, you know, without question, the best game of the year for the offensive line and maybe one of the best games of the PJ Fleck era in the offensive line. And I think to break it down, you know, one further step, the biggest factor in the run game I felt was just the offensive line blocking on the second level. I would challenge anybody on to find an explosive run from Potts or Ibrahim where there was not Gopher offensive linemen eating up linebackers on the second level. I mean, that was just you could tell it was a point of emphasis with the coaching staff. They were very physical up front, of course, against the defensive line, but there was definitely emphasis to get those guys downfield, to get ahead on a linebacker and disrupt things on that second level, which then puts in most cases, put the running back, and I'm sure we'll get into talking about Mo, but put him one-on-one with defensive backs. And when that happens, you know, you end up with the day rushing the ball like you did on Saturday.
Yeah, specifically, I thought Connor Olson had a much, much better week against Illinois than he did against Maryland. That's where going back and watching the tape or even kind of reviewing the PFF grades, it was tough for me to disagree from watching the Maryland game. PFF didn't grade Connor Olson particularly well, and then they graded him well this week, and you watch the tape back. Olson was doing a very good job of getting to the second level. I think the right side of the offensive line in general played a bunch improved from a week ago. That might have been Blaze Andrews' best game at right tackle, both in pass protection and against the run. I said this in the pre-production meeting, and I still think it holds true. I don't think Minnesota has ever run that well in a plus one box in the 9 years I've covered the team. So again, for those of you, what is plus one in the box? Say Illinois had seven people, seven defenders in the box. Minnesota only had six blockers. So there's and technically going to be a free rusher. It just didn't matter, you know, whether it was the offensive line continuing to open holes, whether it was Ibrahim being patient, looking where the hole was going to be, not where it currently is. And in all reality, it's a combination of both. But they were just so effective at getting Ibrahim to the second level where he can start to do some damage and set up his blocks even further. And there were, as Derek talked about, it's tough to find a run where Ibrahim gets free, where Ibrahim sets up that second level block so well. And I believe there were a few different runs. One that stands out to me in particular is from the first half where Ibrahim bursts through the right side and he sticks on the inside hip of, I believe it was Connor Olson, the right guard at the second level. Well, because he pressed in on the inside hip of the guard, the safety or the linebacker comes down and also sticks on that hip. And then Ibrahim just plants his left foot in the ground, gets outside. The safety can't get a clean hit on Ibrahim and he just bounces away. And that's where the combination of the offensive line and the tight ends as well. I mean, Bryce Witham, Minnesota's tight end with Ko Kief out for the second straight game because of the concussion protocol. He has been an absolute asset in the run game and he has been very, very good. And the combo of the Minnesota moving company up front plus Ibrahim playing at an elite level paid dividends for Minnesota. As Luke mentioned, 325 yards rushing on the day. Mo Ibrahim is just having a season of all seasons here, but the offensive line and the tight ends deserve a lot of credit as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, you got to take advantage of the opportunities, and that's what Mo Ibrahim has done this season. But he's been given a lot of opportunities by this offensive line, especially in this game. You know, it's very obvious with the 30 carries that he's been afforded and 224 yards. He's cashed in on those. I don't want to make fun of you too much, Ryan, but, you know, he has become much more than I think any of us could have ever imagined. And it's really impressive given, you know, given what we saw early. He saw some early success in his freshman season, then was injured for a bit. But the consistency that he's been able to bring and now the durability has been really remarkable.
Yeah, I haven't gotten all the tweets and all the posts on Gopher Illustrated about it, so I appreciate you bringing that up to me. I didn't know that I might have had a take that
sorry.
Wasn't particularly good.
My bad.
It's crazy to look at what Ibrahim's doing this year. And he's got 97 carries through three games, which is I still believe is incredibly unsustainable. They need to get that touch mark down to the 25 to 30 range instead of 30 to 40 every week. But he's got 571 rushing yards. Now, I don't know if either of you read my piece on Gopher Illustrated last night. I'm going to doubt you did. But do you know how many yards after contact Mo Ibrahim has this season? Derek, let's start with you.
Probably half, probably close to half would be my guess.
Yeah, I was going to say a third. So somewhere between a third and a half, let's say.
He has 324 rushing yards after contact. Not just like rushing yards in general, 324 total. He's averaging over 100 yards a game after contact. That's I don't think I've seen something like that. But he is, I mean, Fleck compared him to Superman last night. And it's actually in a realistic somehow scenario. He compared him to Superman's vision. And Mo's vision, and I was asking Derek about this during the game, is the best. I think he's in a tier from I've only been on this beat for nearly a decade now. But the guys with the best vision that come to mind are either Rodney Smith or David Cobb. I think he's in a mini tier above those two. Just because the way he can set up blocks and the way he can find creases that aren't even really there, and he can slip through them so quickly and get north and south and then always fall forward is remarkable. I already gushed about the way he was setting up blocks for his offensive lineman at the second level, but it's just his ability to also, I mean, folks, if you want to think about it, when was the last time you saw Mo Ibrahim get squared up? And by squared up, actually take a lick. And take a big hit. And it's been a while for me, because I don't know that any of the last, certainly this season on his 97 carries, I can't really think of too many, or even over the course of his career, of which Ibrahim's got 413 carries in his career already. He's averaging 5.65 yards per carry on over 400 carries. I mean, he is the perfect fit for what PJ Fleck wants to do offensively. And he had himself another game, and he just grinds. And as PJ would say, you know, he's not the biggest guy in the world, the strongest or the fastest, but what he does really, really well is run in this zone blocking scheme. And he always falls forward, and he is just the master of manipulating defenders, Derek.
So,
yeah, I think if I had to break down real quick, Luke, you know, what Mo is doing, Ryan kind of touched on it. He makes a decision, and he's able to watch the second and third level and wait until they make a run fit. And after they've made a run fit, he'll make a cut off that. A lot of backs, particularly young ones, they're only reading the line blocking. So they're looking for the hole. They're determining who's hooked, who's pushing outside. They'll make a cut off a block. And once they get past that, they'll put a move on a linebacker or a safety or something once it's one-on-one. What Mo's doing is he can read that first level, you know, in his sleep, and he's looking at the safety or linebacker to see them make a commitment. And like Ryan said, if they commit inside, he's able to bounce it outside or vice versa. And if they don't make a commitment, if they stay back, he will run right at them. So you see a couple times during the game, he breaks the line of scrimmage. If the safety stands there and waits for him, he'll put his head down and run right over him. Where if the safety or linebacker makes a commitment, he'll, like I said, he'll bounce outside or make a cut off of it. So it's pretty, you know, we've had a few of these moments over the years on the podcast, just, you know, pointing out this exceptional play and just say, don't take it for granted. Take some time to realize how special this is, because it's fun to watch. And, you know, as they play better run defenses, for example, Iowa coming up this weekend or Wisconsin later in the year, I think the thing that's going to carry over the best is some of their short yardage package with Seth Green. That's a really dynamic, tough package to stop, even for really elite defenses. And that, I think, was going to carry through. And, you know, the reality is when you play those better defenses, those explosive gains are going to be kept to a minimum. And you're going to be in more of the second and fours and the third and twos and things like that, where you're in those short yardage situations. And that's something to look for as they play those better defenses, something we can look at.
So what I wanted to transition to, and I'm glad you got to this, Derek, like, we do have to appreciate what we're seeing with Ibrahim. But the fact of the matter is, Ryan made a great point earlier, that this is not sustainable, even in a pandemic shortened season. Okay. So where do we go here? And where do we find touches for other running backs? It looks like Treyson Potts is probably out. I don't know the severity of his injury, but the fact he's in a walking boot, you know, that to me was a great opportunity. He had a great opportunity to take a lot of those carries away from Mo, because he was showing some growth and maturation there. But where do we go from here? Cam Wiley a little bit, but I'm just speculatively for both of you, where do we go from here?
Yeah, that's where it's tough, because Potts, all he continues to do is have first down runs on the carries that he gets. And it's obviously very limited carries. He's had 11 carries in 3 weeks. But we talked about it coming into the year, Luke, and why I was high on Potts is he is just a different kind of runner than what Ibrahim is. He has the speed on the jet sweeps, or he has the speed in the second level to pull away. You saw it on his long run on Saturday night there. He's able to just move around the safety, I guess weave around him would be the best way to describe it. And he was just a change of pace where he's more east-west. And that's where he gets knocked out of the game. He's on the cart to the locker room. And then I think it's funny that people actually believe PJ Fleck in terms of injury updates. Luke, I guess we haven't done a good enough job on this podcast to say, with depth charts and injury updates, never believe PJ Fleck. Because Fleck says to the sideline reporter, for TV at halftime, yeah, I'm hopeful he's going to come back. And then they show a shot of Treyson Potts in the third quarter. Yeah, he's in street clothes and a boot,
right,
on the sidelines. Like, it's tough for me to believe that he's going to be back, especially on a short week. But don't believe what Fleck says. I mean, I'll do some digging and I'll post what I hear on Gopher Illustrated about Potts' availability. But I mean, I thought that Wiley, I mean, I think there's clearly a separation. I think that Potts, I think Ibrahim's in his own tier. I think Potts is in his own tier below Ibrahim. And I think that Wiley is below him. Now, it was nice to see Wiley kind of grind some runs out there in the fourth quarter, but Wiley is just a direct descendant of what Ibrahim wants to do. I mean, he's a north-south one-cut runner, and that's where, yeah, he's got a lot more deep speed, whereas if Wiley gets in the open field, you're not going to catch him. It's just you'd like to see hopefully Bryce Williams or Jason Williamson get a shot here next week, because I just think that it's a little bit redundant to have your change of pace or your number two running back to spell Ibrahim be the same type of guy. Now, Derek, what do you think? It's just – I don't like redundancy, especially at the running back position. I like having a guy that can keep defenses a little bit off balance, but what do you think?
Let me also just add quickly, like, well, how much do you, Derek, subscribe to the spare and a pair that your old head coach was coined that term?
I don't at all for 2020, because as we've seen, 97 carries through three games. I don't sound like no pair and no spare to me, Derek.
Yeah, well, it's a little different because the season's shortened, so that's certainly a factor. I think part of that adage is, dealing with injuries. So if you're playing a 12-game season, you want to have a pair and a spare, because the odds of RB1 going through the entire season without even a soft tissue injury is unlikely. So it's going to be different this year. I guess my what I would say, to add to what Ryan said is, Trayson looks like he's ready. He looks like he's the clear RB2, but of course with the injury now, in a shortened week coming up, here, it's probably going to be Cam and probably Bryce Williams. I don't know that they'd put in a guy in this first game, whoever that would be behind Bryce. And Cam, frankly, Cam's a guy that still looks like he's still learning. That's perfectly fine. That's, I won't go through the whole speech again, but college football players, some guys, there's a progression. Some guys take, a year to go from kind of level one to level two. Some guys takes two games. Some guys take 3 years. So, but Cam's a guy that's still learning. I wouldn't even say he's behind. It's probably completely normal for someone in his position. But that being said, it is a little bit of a step down. And then in terms of styles, Ryan, I think you're right. Have somebody as a change of pace is probably good for the defense. They are putting in, some different plays. One of the things they did on Saturday, with their inside and outside zone, they ran it out of multiple different sets and different blocking schemes. And that, I think, kept the defense off balance. So whether or not they have to go to, multiple different backs, the good thing is they look really clean up front. They're able to make it to stay unpredictable up front with some of the blocking schemes. You even saw them mix in a couple of jet passes to Rashad, and they use their zone blocking scheme off of that to kind of mimic an outside zone, and it was able to get Rashad to the edge. So I think they're dynamic enough to maybe cover a little bit of a step down if they have to go away from Mo in these games coming up, and that's the hope. I think they can do it up front.
All right, so just real quick before we move on to the passing game, I was a little surprised to see Axel Rushmeyer. Ryan, do you have any sense whether or not he was playing injured, or is he back full go? I mean, he played basically the entire game. Kudos to him. I mean, he gets tough guy of the week from me.
Yeah, it looked like, as we talked about last week, looked like an ankle injury. And, he played every snap. Now, I didn't think that he particularly had a great game, but he was in there for every snap. And tough guy, Minnesotan, I guess, one of us that powers through it. But Eric, you would probably be a better judge of it. Did you think mobility wise there was really any difference from Axel Rushmeyer a week ago when healthy against Maryland to this past week against Illinois?
Not that I could tell. I'm guessing it probably was an ankle injury, and the saving grace is that position can play on that injury the quickest, because you're, naturally offensive line is a position where you're not playing in as much space, your cuts and things like that aren't as important. I mean, that same type of injury on a running back or wide receivers, you're not coming back until you're at 100%, where I've played with that type of injury myself. And even at 50%, 60% mobility, they basically cast up your foot, for lack of a better term. They, you know, put multiple layers of tape, get that stabilized, and you're able to play with it. So, but no, I didn't notice anything glaringly different in terms of mobility.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the passing game on the day. Tanner Morgan, 17 for 27, 216 yards. He did have an interception. I wouldn't say that this was the best game for Tanner. There are opportunities that he missed, specifically, like, what comes to mind is he underthrew Bateman on a deep ball that could have easily been a touchdown. And there are other, you know, decisions that, you know, maybe have made a better decision. He has a better stat line, but fairly pedestrian for him. But part of that is he set the bar pretty high for himself, right? But in the passing game, Rashad Bateman, 10 receptions, 139 yards, and a touchdown. Mo Ibrahim get involved a little bit, but again, nobody had more than two receptions after Bateman. Very, very obvious that they're keying in on Bateman and trying to get him the ball, as he's definitely by far the best receiver, not only probably on the team, but in the Big Ten as well. Ryan, let's start with you. What were your thoughts kind of on the passing game in general?
Yeah, after watching it back this morning, I thought that Tanner Morgan was average. I don't think he was good. I don't think he was horrible, but I think he was certainly average to mediocre. Now, it's nice to be able to say that and then look up at the end of the day, and it's not an absolute disastrous stat line as it had been previously before Tanner took over. But you look at his interception on the day, I think he held the ball about a second too long. And then because of that, Bateman is too fast and the ball is underthrown. And, you know, Bateman could have attacked that ball a little bit better, I thought. But the ball is underthrown and it's an interception. There were two or three other throws where Minnesota was very lucky that there wasn't an interception there as well. And, I mean, he was fine. And you complete about roughly 60% of your passes for 13 yards per completion, and you have Rashad Bateman doing Rashad Bateman things. Truthfully, fellas, I mean, we get, what are we, 15, 20 minutes into the podcast here, and we're talking about a 10 for 154 in one day. It was the quietest 10 reception for 150 yards day I can remember. It's because the way Illinois did it, and Derek, I want to get your thoughts on this, is we discussed it a little bit earlier, but they had 6-7 guys in the box so much that they were essentially – just saying, yeah, let's see if you can have Rashad Bateman beat our corners. And Rashad Bateman beat their corners. The touchdown, though, that's one of the funnest plays I've seen from Bateman, is just absolutely smokes the cornerback at the goal line there to get a clean release. Morgan doesn't – I don't think Morgan threw that ball very good, in particular, way too much loft. But Bateman is able to use – his ball tracking abilities and spatial awareness just in an elite manner, where the ball is overthrown, I think, by just a yard or two and has too much loft under it. But Bateman accelerates underneath the ball with his head tilted all the way back and has the spatial recognition to understand he's got to be really close to the sidelines. So he makes this incredible catch far away from his body, Willie Mays-like. Gets a foot in, secures the catch all the way through, and oh, by the way, he made it all look effortless. He's a special talent that, I hope folks can appreciate here for another 4, 5, 6 games, because he's not one that comes around Minnesota quite a bit. But what did you think of Morgan's day, and what's it like to watch such an effortless performance from Rashad Bateman?
Well, as good as the catch was on that touchdown, Ryan, the move to get open was just – was something to behold.
It was so smooth.
Yeah, you have to understand the corner in that call is he's playing with outside leverage. So essentially his number one rule is to not let the wide receiver get outside leverage on him. In other words, not release to a fade. So he's going to give up a skinny slant or something inside because he believes he has help there. And Rashad made it look so easy. He gives an inside dip, gets the corner to turn to flip his hips, and he just made it look so easy to get an outside release, which is just not easy in that situation. So that was, you know, and the catch, of course, was really nice. But that move to get open was, if people are going to watch the game back this week, I would rewind that one a few times and just admire it. But interestingly, in the passing game on offense for the Gophers, we're starting, in my opinion, we're starting to see a trend in defensive philosophy or scheme against the Gopher offense. And by that, I mean, I think that defenses are trying to get pressure on Gopher passing, particularly the RPO situation, to sort of disrupt and basically make Tanner throw quickly and make decisions fast. When Tanner's able to sit back in an RPO situation, if there's not a free rusher or someone doesn't peel off, you know, off of a blocker, he's really going to sit back and pick him apart, because I think his pre and post snap reads at this point in his career are really sharp. But as we saw on Saturday, the throws, you know, hitting his spots was not always there. And that's because he had pressure, and that was the philosophy. So Ryan, when you ask, you know, why is it that Illinois is running plus one in the box against Minnesota? Don't they realize that Minnesota's talent, they have a wide receiver? Well, yes. I mean, my answer to that would be, I think they do, but they're banking on getting pressure in the, particularly in the RPO and play action, so that you can, and this goes back to the Wisconsin game last year. That's how Wisconsin was successful, just to not let Tanner sit back and get clean looks and take his time throwing the ball. So what I will say is, I think that Tanner's getting better. Again, going back to that Wisconsin game, he was really flummoxed and sort of disrupted. He's trying to sit in there. You can just see it. He's trying to hold himself, but he's still kind of got happy feet, and he's still trying to throw quickly. And it's not easy, but the cool thing is this: if he can master that, sitting in there and waiting till the last minute and making a clean throw, watch out, because that's the last resort that a defense has. If he can figure that out, now you're either down to running cover zero, you know, jailbreak blitzes, or you're going to try and sit back in coverage, in which case Minnesota is just going to run the ball. So it's going to be interesting. That's one of those things that, again, when you're going to play these tougher defenses coming up, it's good. I'm going to be watching that really closely, because I think that coaches are seeing that on film, and that's one thing they're going to try to do to try to defend the Gopher offense.
All right, so let's transition to talk defense. Before we do that, let's hear from our favorite insurance agent out in Oakdale.
Well, we talked a lot in the first half of this show, Luke, about protection and how the offensive line did a very good job of protecting the running back and their quarterback in this game. 300 and something rushing yards and only one sack on 27 Morgan dropbacks. And that's what the Burns Insurance Agency wants to do for you, is protect you and protect the things you care about, whether that's your home, whether that's your business, whether that's your car, whatever it may be. And they want to make sure that you're doing that with the best service you can possibly have. And that's where the independent insurance agent comes in, because they're not just someone that is very stuck with the same company. It's not going to always be Allstate or State Farm. They're going to put you first, and they want to make sure you are getting the best deal that you can possibly get with the best amount of coverage that you can possibly have. So if you want to learn more about potentially saving yourself hundreds of dollars by switching your insurance to Insurance by Burns, head to insurancebyburns.com to learn more. Again, insurancebyburns.com.
All right, so not surprisingly, this is the best effort we've seen from the Gopher defense. On the day, Illinois put up, only 14 first downs. They only had 100 yards or 106 yards passing, 181 yards on the ground. They limited the big plays, but still had a number of big plays that resulted basically both of the two touchdowns for the Fighting Illini. But we want to focus in defensively. What we saw from, whether it's a schematic change or how they made improvement against Illinois, or was Illinois just really that bad offensively, which very well might be the case. So Derek, let's start with you. Were you seeing anything drastically different out of this defense to be able to see the results we saw on Saturday?
Yeah, I think we saw some changes in all three areas. I think we saw a couple schematic changes, one significant change in technique, and then we saw some new personnel. They rotated in some new guys, and that may have been injury related, you know, guys coming back from COVID or other injuries, or it may be just trying to get experience, get guys repped in, because the first two games weren't where they wanted to be. But I think I would just start with the two scheme changes, which I think were that stood out the most, were the first that the Gophers moved their front seven quite a bit to try and maintain aggressiveness and cause some disruption. So whether that was defensive line stunts, whether that was some exchange blitzes where, you know, bring somebody in and drop somebody back into coverage. They wanted to be unpredictable with their front seven, but I think most importantly, they wanted those guys doing less reading and reacting and more downhill aggression, particularly against the run. So I think that was a marked change from the first couple weeks. And then the second and probably the biggest schematic change is they really almost completely abandoned the pass coverage that they had run in the first couple games, which was that the man coverage with large cushions on the outside. So those 10, 11 yard cushions, running strictly man coverage, that was largely thrown out the window. And instead they ran mostly full zone or half zone. So either running zone all across the field or running half the field man and half the field zone. So what that allowed them to do was, it allowed them to have those perimeter defenders who are in zone be right there for any runs that came, you know, and broke the edge. So if someone were to bring the ball, whether it's the quarterback or running back outside, now instead of having a cornerback sitting back 11 yards off the line of scrimmage taking on a block from the wide receiver, now they're sitting in a soft zone. The wide receiver releases, and they're sitting right there 5-6 yards off the ball, ready in run support. So I think that helped tremendously. It was good to see that they went to that change. We can talk about how that might affect things going forward and how other teams might counter that. But those are the two things schematically that jumped out to me.
I think personnel wise, that was the best game I've seen from the Gopher defensive line this season, certainly with how physical they were at the point of attack. But specifically, I want to highlight two areas. Number one would be Asezi Otemiwu and Boye Mafe. So number 9 and number 34, I think had their most complete games of their Gopher careers. Now, you can say, well, Ryan, they haven't played in a ton of games. This is really their first year of them getting significant game action in terms of playing a majority of snaps. You'd be right. But the way that they were able to help set the edge so much more consistently should be talked about, because they were very physical with the line nine tackles. You saw both of them be able to turn the corner for some big sacks. And I think their play was also directly impacted by how well Minnesota's young defensive tackles played, because D'Angelo Carter and MJ Anderson and Rashad Chaney, these guys from the 2019 recruiting class as redshirt freshmen, with Keontae Shad out likely for a few weeks now, he tested positive for COVID. He's out a minimum 21 days. So you're going to be seeing a lot of these young kids. And I thought D'Angelo Carter played a good ball game, and he was able to generate pressure. Chaney goes from playing 2 snaps against Maryland to playing 29 snaps last night, roughly 50% of the snaps. I thought he did some good things. And then MJ Anderson, number 9, he played 4 pass rushing snaps last night total, and he had 2 significant pressures. And this is what you want to see. We spent at length on this podcast discussing what kind of positives can we take away from this Gopher defense. Well, if you're telling me these young defensive tackles are going to start playing like this each week and really gaining confidence as the season goes on, and you think to yourself, by the way, they're redshirt freshmen again next year because this is a free year of eligibility, that's where you can start to get a little bit excited. But setting the edge and being able to generate pressure across the board, because the defensive tackles were doing so well, obviously 5 offensive linemen, 4 rushers at times, the interior, the guards were committing themselves to these defensive tackles, which allowed one-on-one opportunities on the outside for Mafe and for Otemiwu, and they were able to take advantage of that. But Derek, setting an edge was something that was seemingly much improved in this game against the Illini.
Well, that was the biggest technique change for sure, and it was sorely needed. We don't have to go back and relive the first couple weeks, but if you could point to something, you know, the biggest deficiency in the first 2 weeks, that's what I would zero in on, was just the inability to set an edge or maintain outside leverage. So as coaches do, they identified it. You can tell that they repped that in practice. They made it a point of emphasis. So whether it was the outside linebacker, the defensive end, or having, you know, Justice Harris come up in the box as a safety, they really made a point to set an outside edge. So now the cutbacks, they get burned a couple times, but that's the way it should be. Those outside runs should be forced back to the pursuit, which then is going to put the pressure on your backside linebackers and safety to make the tackle. And that was a big technique change this game. And frankly, just hope to see that continue going forward, because that made a big difference in limiting explosive plays, particularly those that get outside.
So I think it would be silly of us to not overlook the fact that Joe Rossi was not involved in calling plays this game because he was out with COVID, and Joe Harris-Simiak was calling the defense. How much impact, Ryan and Derek, do you respectively think that just the change at the top of the helm made in the defense's approach to this specific game? And I understand that you're speculating 100%, so I'll put that disclaimer on this. But we did see some pretty significant changes. You can start, Ryan.
Well, I think the only thing I really noticed, I'll let Derek get into the schematics because he's obviously a lot smarter than me. But Fleck talked about after the game how their game plan was to really try to throw a lot of different looks pressure-wise at the Illinois quarterback. I think it was QB3 or QB4 and Karan Taylor for the Illini. And, you know, we saw Coney Durr come on some run blitzes. We saw Justice Harris come out of the slot. You saw some different stunts and some different twists on the interior, just trying to throw different looks at him so he couldn't get comfortable back there. And Fleck also mentioned how Joe Rossi is quarantined in one room in his house right now. I believe he's got a floor all to himself. Essentially, it's just him in a room, and there's a bathroom on that same floor, and he's not even really seeing his family, which is incredibly sad. But Rossi is still involved. He wasn't involved, obviously, during the game. That's not permissible. But during the week here, he was still involved via Zoom and all the meetings, still involved in the game plan, because that's all he can do right now. Is he can't even really see his family. Is he's just game planning and trying to make sure that his linebackers can play as fast as possible. But, Derek, what do you think? I mean,
I don't Harris, think that – I don't.
Harris Simiak, yeah, really, okay. Just again, I think it was just the game plan. I don't know if it was Harris-Simiak calling, making those decisions versus Rossi, but defensive game plan-wise, they just wanted to generate pressure early, and they were able to kind of generate pressure with 3 and 4 as the game went on.
Yeah, I don't think the game required a big shift in defensive play calling from the game plan. So you can tell that they made some concerted changes going into the game in the coverage and some of the personnel rotations and the technique that we've already covered. And those obviously carried out and it worked out well. And then, of course, in the situation in the second half where you become one, you make the opposing team become one dimensional. You can just sort of lean on them, and then your 4-man rushes get better and things like that. So what we didn't see was if the Gophers had game planned and schemed for what they thought Illinois was going to do, and then Illinois comes out in a brand new package, or they start running, you know, with personnel or formations that they hadn't schemed against, that's typically when your defensive coordinator puts more pressure on them on the day of the game. So we didn't see that. The game plan was solid, obviously, judging by the results. And I think that it went according to plan for the most part.
All right. So, you know, defensively too, we still saw some of these explosive plays, but they were able to limit them significantly. Obviously, setting the edge is a big part of that, being able to limit them. This is an area where this defense in particular, this is where they need to improve most, right, is not allowing explosive plays, because as long as their offense can kind of dictate a style or at least put them in a positive game script, this defense just needs to basically hold serve and not give up those massive plays. So going forward, how do we do that? Do we still have to see them be able to set the edge, maintain run fits, etc.? How do we limit these explosive plays? Because from my vantage point, the majority of the explosive plays have been in the run game.
I mean, I know it looks better at the end of the game where Minnesota wins by 4 touchdowns, but Illinois running back still ran for like 9 yards a carry yesterday. Now they just had to abandon the run because they're down so much, and obviously the time is against them. But yes, setting the edge is the easiest thing, and Minnesota did a lot better that, because what setting the edge does is you funnel them instead of, if you don't set the edge, they can get the sideline, and there's obviously not a lot of players there. If you can funnel them back towards the middle, that's where the masses are, and that's where you have a better chance for somebody to make a play. Now, they did a better job of setting the edge, but the linebackers still have to be a lot better. And I think the biggest change you saw with the linebackers from last week to this week was James Gordon played 21 snaps. He didn't play any defensive snaps last week. And Cody Lindenberg went from playing 100% of the snaps against Maryland to only 50% of the snaps against Illinois. Now, I thought Lindenberg played a lot better. I think he tackled much better than he did the previous week. Now, I'm sure he'd like to have that fourth and one back where he's actually able to cross the offensive lineman's face and be there in the backfield where Illinois was in the red zone, and he just can't trip him up. But you can see that Lindenberg and James Gordon and Donald Willis have the ability to be athletic and to have the twitch and the speed to go sideline to sidelines. Or I even saw Cody Lindenberg shed a couple of blocks. I mean, that's what you want to see from these freshman linebackers. But these are amateur athletes that we're talking about, and I understand that, but I need to see a whole hell of a lot more from Mariano Sorry-Marin. It's just, I understand he's a big kid and he's long and he's smart and it's all accounts a very hard worker, but I don't understand why he isn't being rotated out in certain packages, because there are too many times you watch the game back and he has this innate ability to always have someone in his face, and he's on the ground way too much. Just, he is constantly on the ground at times. And that can't be the case if you're a linebacker, especially one that's playing the Mike position. You need to be able to shed blocks. You need to be able to be in the right spot to make tackles. He's in the right spot at the goal line to meet Mike Epstein in the hole for a tackle for loss. And he has him, doesn't wrap up, spins off him for a touchdown. He's in there in coverage, ready to make the interception, can't come down with the ball. Again, I'm sure he's pressing because he knows he's not playing up to what he wants to be. But, Derek, what do you think? Because as Luke mentioned, for this defense to continue to take the next right steps, that's going to start this Friday against Iowa. But I still think, yes, the linebackers were better, and we saw a little bit of change in personnel, which you like to see. But this is a group that still has a long way to go.
Yeah, I mean, I can't add too much. They're going to, in order to answer Luke's question, in order to continue to improve and compete against the top tier of the Big Ten, they're going to need better play and run support out of their linebackers. And there a lot of the guys in there are learning, as you mentioned it, Ryan. They're now rotating in guys, and some of those guys have the athleticism and they've got the speed, but they have to learn the game. They're going to play a little bit tentative. That's understandable. It's going to come with experience. And they better tackling. They've got to wrap up. There were a few times, particularly a couple of Illinois' biggest explosive gains. They're in there. They're in the run fit. They're in the hole. You got to make the tackle. We've talked about it a couple times. I don't want this to be an excuse, but I question whether or not a shortened fall camp, probably a limited number of live reps, things like that, are adversely affecting that group. Now, it's the same for everybody. Every team, it has that same challenge. But whatever it is, they do need to elevate their play at linebacker, because as we talked about it, when you're able to schematically set the edge and you're funneling things the way you should be, the number one player to make a tackle on an outside running play is the backside linebacker. If that guy is making the play, that's how it quote unquote should be. So, and then beyond him, it's the safety. So, they're still learning at safety. Tyler is still learning his run fits. He's getting more comfortable with determining whether I'm taking a guy down, trying to take a guy down in an open field, which is a different type of tackle, versus if I'm the second or third guy in on a tackle, that's a different type of tackle. So he's trying to make that determination and not, don't take one technique, over the other. But the bottom line is I think they're coming along on the defensive line. We saw some things, offensive line play is going to improve that they face. So it's good that they're going to have to step up. But ultimately, what I'd most like to see is just a little more sharp tackling and run fits out of the linebacker position.
All right. So before we talk a little bit of special teams and close out this podcast, we should get in another word for our sponsor, the Goal Line Club. Again, the Goal Line Club is a booster club for Gopher football. They only support Gopher football. So if you're interested in monetarily supporting Gopher football, being a part of the Goal Line Club is a great way to do that. You can become a member at goallineclub.org. Some of the ways that they support Gopher football is helping identify and find equipment that the team needs that might be outside of their normal budget. Additionally, they're able to find they're able to get like coats and things for players who are coming on recruiting visits, players' families that are coming on recruiting visits. I know that doesn't really apply in 2020, but that's just one of the tangible ways that that money is used to help those folks have coats in these climates that they may not be familiar with. Additionally, they're just a great organization with some great people. It's a great way to network and get to meet some other Gopher fans if you're looking to broaden out that network. I highly suggest joining, and you can do that by going to goallineclub.org. Okay, one of the things before we talk special teams that I want to highlight is if you look at PJ Fleck over the tenure that he has been with the Gophers, the Gophers have been a very, very low penalized team. Again, this was the case this week. Only two penalties for 22 yards. Conversely to Iowa's 12 for 120. I do think that he and staff deserve to be commended for the fact that this team is usually pretty sharp in terms of not making, you know, pre-snap mental mistakes and sometimes post-snap mental mistakes. I'm not trying to say that they're completely void of that. It's pretty impossible to do. It's the game of football. Stuff happens, right? But the fact that they're not penalized and they're not shooting themselves in the foot so far with penalties during his tenure is really remarkable. Derek, as a player that, you know, that played especially on the offensive line, how difficult is it to actually avoid penalties, you know, whether it's false starts or, you know, procedural things like illegal formations, etc.?
Well, you hit the nail on the head. There's those pre and post snap mental mistakes. That's kind of your first phase. And obviously the younger a player and the more inexperienced, the more apt you are to commit things like that, because you're not confident in your thought process. So whether that's, you know, whether you're thinking through your assignment or trying to, if you're on defense and you're trying to adjust the formation, you know, then you're not zoned in on the cadence and jump off sides, for example. So that's just a natural, you know, maturation of a player. And then, you know, then you have basically the rest of it is technique. So you have some of those, what some coaches call, you know, these aggressive penalties, things like holding or defensive pass interference. And that's not to say, you know, if you're being aggressive, you should have some of those penalties. No, if you're using the proper technique, you should be able to have full aggressiveness, but, you know, be free of penalties. So not making mistakes. I mean, it's something that, you know, coaches address that in a few ways. One of them is just, you know, flat out not playing guys that aren't ready if they're going to make mistakes, and you know, they'll just hold off on that. But beyond that, it's an emphasis, and so it's a learning process. Guy commits a penalty or several, and you go back the next week, and that's a point of emphasis with the coaching staff. So it's, I mean, short answer to your question, Luke, the younger and more inexperienced, the more difficult it is. But as you you mature as a player, you know, most of that should be eliminated. It's going to be, you didn't ask this question, but what's going through my mind now is they're about to face a team in Iowa that, you know, they're a game script team. We've talked about this several times, you know, in the past, and they're not going to have very many mistakes. So yes, the first thing Minnesota has to do is try and limit their own mistakes, but that you can't get into a war trying to be mistake free against the games. That's what they want you to do. So I think it's a prerequisite, but that can't be the one and only thing that's going to carry them to victory versus a game script team.
Well, I think it's an interesting point you bring up, Luke, is the penalty situation. Now, I just was curious because I hadn't even really checked into it. Of teams that have played multiple games in the Big Ten, Minnesota is the least penalized team, and it's not even close. Of teams that have played three games in Big Ten play, Minnesota has 10 total penalties through three games for an average of 27 penalty yards per game. The next closest is Iowa, who has 19 penalties. So Minnesota has half as many penalties as teams that have played three games. And it's also an interesting kind of nugget here is that teams playing Minnesota have been the most penalized teams in the Big Ten. They're averaging nearly 10 penalties against them for almost 100 yards of penalty yards per game, which is absurd. So, it, as you mentioned, Luke, it's another PJ Fleck thing. Is since he's been here, Minnesota went from one of the most penalized teams to one of the least penalized teams, and it remains true here in year four.
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways, I don't know how you can directly correlate, you know, the lack of penalties and how you correlate that to, you know, something within your program. But I would give PJ some credit in the fact that if you're able to have success, you know, and not gather those penalties, that's a function of the culture that he has, right? And the accountability that they've set, and just how everybody kind of buys in and works for one another, right? The attention to detail, etc. So I just felt like it's important to note because they've continued to have success in that. It's so weird to say success in lack of penalties. The sentence doesn't really construct itself right. But the fact of the matter is they've been pretty good in that area. Now let's talk special teams. This is an area that during the PJ Fleck tenure, they've frankly not been good. We've stated that time and time again. But finally, it seemed like they had a semblance of competency. I wouldn't say they were amazing by any stretch of the imagination, but it helps when you have all your guys available, Ryan. And we saw a number of different guys getting into the fold here on special teams.
It was nice. Yeah. And that was my biggest key to the game. We talked about my third key to the game when we talked about in the preview edition of this show, Luke, is can special teams just not hurt the team? Well, they didn't. I mean, they missed an extra point, but it didn't matter. And you had Dragan Kesage back, the true freshman walk-on from Wisconsin. He was back after missing the first two games with COVID. He was your kickoff guy. Minnesota actually had a guy that could kick it to the end zone. What a concept in 2020. You saw the Australian punter make his debut, only one punt on the day, but he pins inside the 15. I'm here for it. I thought kickoff coverage was fine when they were deciding to actually run the ball out. They didn't have a ton of success. And that's where I can't tell you how many folks have reached out to me, including near and dear to our hearts, Lee Peterson, Luke, trying to get me to talk up special teams. Guys, this is what it's supposed to look like.
Yeah.
This should be what it looks like, is the special teams doesn't kill you. I mean, it's fine. I mean, you finally had a guy kick it to the end line. You missed an extra point. Kickoff coverage was fine. You didn't punt a lot. I mean, this is what it's supposed to look like. And trust me, I'm already terrified because Iowa special teams have forever been good. I think they had a couple of return touchdowns already this year. So Minnesota's going to be challenged to say, now that everyone is healthy, quote unquote, with Crawford back and your kickoff guy back and Lance back, let's see if Minnesota can actually put it together and actually help their team win a game, because the Vegas line just came out for the Gopher-Iowa game on Friday night, and it's a pick 'em. So you're telling me 50-50 coin flip. Well, it's the special teams that Derek and Luke have talked about endlessly that dictate how things kind of swing. And that's where this special teams unit needs to bring something, because last I looked, Luke, the return game is still absolutely nil.
I mean, we do got to give Philip Howard credit. He did have an eight yard return.
Did you see it?
What? No,
ran forward, caught the ball, and then baseball slid.
No, I'm aware. Okay. Statistically, he got 8 yards on one of two returns, right? Typically in the PJ Fleck era, there's not even a return other than the one against Wisconsin that Demetrius Douglas took to the house. So the fact that he actually returned it is enough.
Minnesota's got positive punt return yards in 2020. It's a step forward.
It is. It is indeed. I think before we close out here, Derek, we often ask you to weigh in on especially the rivalry games that include the trophies, being the fact that you actually played in these and the significance of this this upcoming game against Iowa. So if you could just weigh in quickly on this game coming up and what it means, especially as a player.
Well, it means a lot for all the Gopher players, because it's a rivalry and there's a long-standing tradition. You're playing for a trophy. It especially means something for the guys on the team that are from Minnesota. Of course, you grew up with that rivalry and hearing about it. And I think a third factor in this week is Minnesota hasn't come out on top, much at all. in the last number of years. So Minnesota is, I would guess, is itching to make that right. This is a good opportunity for them to do so. And you know, on top of that, it's you know, your records and previous play and things like that, I think, mean a little bit less than a rivalry game. I know it's kind of a cliche, but those guys are, you know, both those teams are going to be jacked up for the game despite not having a crowd, because it doesn't matter. They're playing a rival. The guys in Minnesota are tired of losing to Iowa. The Iowa players want to keep, you know, the trophy. They don't want to have to go home without it. So it's going to be fun. And this is one of the unique things about college football, that it's not a playoff based season like the way the NFL is. And that's part of the fun of it and enjoyment as a fan. But, you know, as a player, it's just kind of the next level of being able to, you know, think of some of those guys that maybe haven't had the chance to beat them. They want to go out having said they beat Iowa, you know, and done it at least one time. So should be fun.
And that's where you look at this Iowa team in 2020, they're 1-2. They lost their first two games and then able to get back on track against Michigan State, thanks to some defensive and special teams plays. But Derek talked about it. Iowa is a team that you need to try and get out of whatever their game plan was coming into it. And I would imagine Iowa thinks they're going to be able to come in here and run the ball, and they probably will because Minnesota's run defense is so porous. But if Minnesota is going to win this game, they have to put it on the shoulders of Spencer Petras. So their young quarterback who did not play well in their first two games. He's only completing 55% of his passes. Iowa's somehow already thrown 106 times through three games, which isn't the Iowa I know and remember. But you also remember back to that 2019 game where Minnesota's undefeated going in down there, and Iowa's coaches just completely blow Minnesota out of the water for the first 20 minutes. Minnesota gets in a 3-score hole. And then for the final 40 minutes, Minnesota's coaches come back, make adjustments, and Minnesota's the better team. But you dug yourself too big of a hole too early in the game. And that's where I think schematic wise or just game plan wise, Iowa's coaches are among the best in the Big Ten. Now I can tell you with a fact, I had many discussions with Gopher staff members over the offseason and into fall camp that they know they need to win a game against Iowa. They're 0-3 in PJ Fleck's tenure. They're tired of hearing that. They've done a lot of game plan work for it, and that's where you hope that Minnesota can actually come out hot against Iowa and not be the one put in a hole. But, Luke, we'll get into that preview a little bit later this week.
Yeah, absolutely. Derek, I want to thank you again. I'll give you guys just a final parting opportunity to share something if you're interested before we close out. You guys got anything?
I won't be on the preview episode, but I would game script teams. We've talked about this in the past. I would really like to see Minnesota come out extremely aggressive. I know PJ Fleck has a tendency to be conservative in these games and try and play mistake free. I think that's the wrong approach. I think if you look at teams that are able to beat the Iowas, the Northwesterns, and the Wisconsins, they do it through explosive plays, through being aggressive, particularly on offense. And of course you have to be sharp as well, but don't try and play small ball against a small ball team. Don't try and run a Princeton offense against Princeton offense team. I'm going to be looking at that closely on Friday to see what kind of approach they take.
Yeah. And I think my final thoughts would be, I'm as optimistic about this game because of the way Minnesota played in the trenches. The offensive line had arguably their best game of the year in pass protection with physicality in the run game. And that's exactly how you want to have the offensive line feeling going into a big rivalry game against a team that has traditionally beat up Minnesota in the trenches here in the last few years. I want the offensive line playing confident. And that's where you also like to see the D linemen starting to gain some success and starting to gain some confidence. They're going to need to do that once again next Friday night against Iowa. And then, as Derek mentioned, don't come out with this cookie cutter vanilla BS on offense. Come out, be aggressive, show some creativity, and don't just try to do inside zone right, inside zone left. Now, again, that works against the Illinois of the world. Illinois is not a very good football team. Minnesota was a better football team. They showed it all night. And you're going to need to, especially with a team that many consider to be on the same tier as Minnesota, you need to come out and show something different to throw Iowa off their game, put them on their heels. And that's where you'd like to see maybe them diversifying things in the passing game portfolio. Rashad Bateman, he's getting 50% of the targets, so one out of every two throws. If you're Iowa, your game plan should be take away Rashad Bateman. Make him go to Daniel Jackson or Chris Ottman-Bell or Brevin Spanford, Seth Green. And that's where you'd like to have Minnesota know that that's probably going to be the game plan. And you'd like to see them come out hot.
All right. Well, we want to thank everybody for listening again. We appreciate it if you rate and review the podcast. This bit is getting long, and it will continue into the preview episode once again. So if you want to rate and review, we will read that. Derek, I want to thank you for joining. I want to thank our sponsors, both the Burns Insurance Agency and the Goal Line Club. The Goal Line Club will have an event for this Iowa game. It will be Thursday, so do check their website for that. We'll have more details in the preview again. Thank you all for listening, and go Gophers.